Blog Talk Radio.
Hopefully you folks can hear me okay. I've connected to this show through the computer, trying to use that even more as we change our formats. I want to play Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman, and her host as they try to deal with this latest gun tragedy in Texas.
This mass shooting in particular, mass shooting is unique, especially to the community it impacts and the victims it impacts. We know from our research and our reporting that we're seeing a lot of things in this mass shooting that we see in most mass shootings. And that in particular is the link between mass shootings and domestic violence. The majority of mass shooters in this country the majority of shootings are connected to domestic violence or family violence in some way. Either mass shooters are targeting their own family members and loved ones, or they have a history of domestic violence. And you see that here in this case, and it only reinforces the inextricable and deadly links between domestic violence, firearm violence in this country, and how essential it is to ensure that abusers don't get access to firearms.
So let's talk about this man again. Police say they don't know the reason for him going to this church, choosing this church, if there was one, and opening fire. But his record is remarkable. He was in the U.S. Air Force. He was arrested for assaulting his wife and his child. He was in prison for a year in the military. This is back in 2012. He is he leaves the military with bad conduct, and because this attack was not a dishonorable discharge, he was legally able to purchase this weapon.
Yes. Well, we, like you all, are trying to figure out all the details around his record and the background check itself. Again, we know how essential it is to strengthen our laws to make sure, in particular, that those that have a record of history of domestic violence do not get access to firearms. That means expanding the number of domestic violence crimes and conduct would prohibit someone from purchasing a firearm, and then making sure once an abuser is prohibited that they have to turn in the firearms. We know that these laws work. In fact, recent research out academics tell us that laws that prohibit abusers from possessing firearms and require them to turn in the firearms they own are responsible for 14% reduction in firearm gun homicide of intimate partners, right? So we know these laws have impact. We know they can work, but we have a lot of work to do to make sure these laws are as strong as possible.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the findings in your report, and since 2009, more than half of the mass killings are committed by usually a white man who has somehow engaged in domestic or family violence before. Women in the U.S. 16 times more likely to be killed with a gun than women in other high-income countries, making this country the most dangerous in the developed world when it comes to gun violence against women. Every year, American women suffer from 5.3 million incidents of intimate partner violence. And then you are suggesting this, and in these cases, goes much larger. Why? Especially if it's critical that it be caught early, not to mention, of course, the horror of the violence committed against women originally.
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes, you know, we've heard people talk about the link between domestic violence and mass shootings. The domestic violence often the canary in the coal mine for the ways in which these shooters can have a reverberating impact both on their families and the community around them. You know, again, I would reiterate that we know so much about the links between domestic violence and firearm violence in terms of deaths, as you mentioned, but also in terms of the way firearms play a role in domestic violence generally. 4.5 million women report being threatened with a firearm in their lifetime. One in four victims of domestic violence say that a firearm played a role in the abuse. We also know from our mass shootings analysis that you referenced the way that children are impacted. Of all the mass shootings we've analyzed since 2009, children make up a quarter of the fatalities, and those fatalities are driven by the connection between mass shootings and domestic violence. So when we think about this, we should be thinking about it both, of course, in terms of the women, the victims. We should be thinking about it in terms of their families. And then when it comes to mass shootings, we think about the impact it's having on our communities and on this country as a whole.
The company that manufactured the bump stocks used by the Las Vegas shooter Stephen Paddock to kill 59 people, including himself and nearly 500 others, the company manufactures, in a word I think most people in the United States never even heard of before, bump stocks, said last week it's resumed sales of the devices, which effectively turn semi-automatic rifles into fully automatic machine guns, the way Paddock used it in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday, the company's Slide Fire Solutions said it would make a number of its bump stocks available online at a starting price of $180. Now, I think a lot of people are listening saying, no, Congress voted against this after the Las Vegas massacre. And even, I think, they thought that the NRA said it was okay. But fact, this legislation did not go through Congress. I mean, the NRA actually didn't want it to do Congress, but just thought, okay, we can change a rule on this and want it to be permanent. But the Republican-led Congress stopped even the bump stock ban from going forward.
That is correct.
What does this mean, Sarah Tofte?
Well, I think it shows us how much work we have to do to get this Congress to do the right thing, and to do the right thing not only in terms of bump stocks, but to do the right thing in terms of comprehensive background checks, to do the right thing in terms of blocking NRA-backed legislation that would deregulate silencers, blocking NRA-backed legislation that would lessen and basically literally sort of permitting processes. We need Congress to do more in terms of strengthening our domestic violence laws. But I think the failure of bump stocks is an indication of how much work we have to do and how many people we need to join us in doing this work and turning sort of our prayers for peace and our prayers to end gun violence into action.
I want to go to break and have you stay with us, Sarah. Sarah Tofte, Research Director at Every Town for Gun Safety. Her team just published a new report on the links between domestic violence and mass shootings over the last, 9 years or so. More than half of them are related to domestic violence or begin with the warning sign. Coverage of Sunday's mass shooting at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, tiny rural community east of San Antonio, Texas. Governor said it's the worst shooting in Texas history. 26 people dead, 20 more wounded, including children, elderly, a pregnant woman, the suspect, Devin Patrick Kelly, White Air Force soldier, court-martialed, jail for a year for assault on his wife, child in 2012, still able to legally purchase a military style assault rifle. Our guest are in Austin, Texas, Ed Brug, Vice Chair and Spokesperson for Texas Gun Sense in Philadelphia. We're joined George Ticarella Marr, University, who was banned from campus after questioning why mass shootings in the U.S. are almost always carried out by white men. And we're first joined in Atlanta by Sarah Tofte, Research Director at Every Town for Gun Safety. Your team just published a report on the links between domestic violence and mass shootings. Ed Scruggs, let's go to you in Texas. Your response to shootings and what is allowed in Texas?
Well, thanks for having me today. Of course, it's a tragic time here in Texas. There's quite a bit of shock throughout the state, and especially in small communities, that the crime of this magnitude could occur. And, of course, our thoughts are with those families and the victims at this time. But part of what our organization is here to do is to remind folks that there are steps that we can take, and there's a discussion we need to have about ways to eliminate this type of violence, and that no one is immune to this violence, whether in rural or urban communities, in the state of Texas or any other state. Here in Texas, what's allowed, it is rather wide open in terms of ownership. In recent years, our state leadership has taken to loosening gun laws in basically any way that they can. Years ago, they legalized campus carry. They also legalized open carry of firearms. It's always been legal here to carry long guns on the street. And that would include a shotgun or an assault-type weapon like an AR-15. A few years ago, there was a groundswell of extreme grassroots activists that began working for open carry and walking down the streets of our capital city here in Austin carrying their AR-15s and having parades, et cetera. Our legislature is very much influenced by what I would call an extremist movement that believes in no gun ownership restrictions whatsoever. And they do have pull with the legislature and with the governor. And it's pretty maddening and shocking to see, actually. But our organization is working hard to have a conversation in the other direction. And we realize what we're up against here. But we are having a conversation. We are getting in the doors of the legislature and talking with folks. And you know, progress is measured here. But we are forcing them to have the conversation. And so that's where we stand.
So Trump in February signed off on legislation that would make it easier for people who are mentally ill to purchase guns. Can you talk about what's the history of dealing with mental illness around guns and this issue we've just been discussing with Sarah Tofte of Everytown for Safety about abuse, their family members being able to get guns, like this man in Texas, who was jailed for a year for assaulting his wife and child.
I think that's, we're less than one day away from this, but that's the big story to come out of this. How did this man, with this record of established violent acts, not only against people but animals, who has served a year in jail, been discharged from the military, how is he able to go out and buy arguably one of the powerful weapons available and commit this crime? It's shocking. I think it should be eye-opening to people who may think, oh, everyone has a background check, or background checks keep one out of the hands of these people. We have safeguards against the mentally ill. That's not really true. There are so many Englands around the background check system. The background check system that we have is not strict enough. It does not go deep enough into personal histories. And that was one element of the rule that Trump rescinded this year, was an attempt by the Obama administration to get a real handle on people who receive disability due to mental health, that would be in the system to where that would flag on a background check, and that's all it was. But of course, gun rights advocates really did not like that at all. That was touching a third rail for them of invading their privacy or something to that effect. And so one of his first acts as president was to rescind that rule. So when the president goes on international television, as he did late last night, our time, and say this is a mental health issue, you have to question, well, are you committed to do something about the mental health issue? But actually, I think to just label this as a mental health issue is somewhat misleading, because under current law, someone convicted of domestic violence is not qualified as mentally ill. They would not be judged incompetent in a court to handle their own affairs. And that's how would keep someone from purchasing a weapon, although the law does say if you are convicted of domestic violence, you should not be able to purchase. It's not as if this suspect, from what we know, would have been classified as a mentally ill person, unable to take care of their own affairs. If this that wakes up the population, perhaps it would be that our background system is not, our background check system is not adequate. Do you not have adequate reporting? We're going to find out how he was able to obtain his weapons, and I think it will be alarming to some people.
What's interesting is President Trump from Japan, where he was pushing and boosting about them buying more U.S. military weapons from the United States, said this isn't the time to talk about gun control after this chilling massacre in Texas. Of course, last week when the massacre took place here in New York with a truck, he said we have to cut down on immigration immediately after the killings had taken place. Now, I also wanted to clarify, he rescinded a rule, so it wasn't exactly signing off on legislation about making it easier for the mentally ill to get guns. But I want to bring George Ciccarella-Marr into this conversation at Drexel University. You wrote immediately after the Las Vegas massacre, where the 60-year-old white man named Pack had opened fire on 100 goers below, killing 59 of them. You were banned from the Drexel campus after questioning why mass shootings in the United States are almost always carried out by white men. Is that right?
Yes, and to be clear, when I began to write about what had happened in Las Vegas, I was really writing about this broad question, right? And I think this is a question that we all need to grapple with. When you see these cases of sort of mass, destroying mass brutality, what is it that makes white men so prone to this kind of behavior? And what might be going on today in our, what might be happening to encourage this kind of behavior and to radicalize these kind of actions? And I was immediately subject to a torrent of some sort of abuse and threats from, right-wing media outlets. We're talking about Breitbart, Daily Caller, and these kind of websites. And it was on the base of those, the purported threats that they represented, that I was excluded from campus. Classes were actually canceled, despite the fact that in my classes I had conversations about this, despite the fact that my students were very knowledgeable and intuitively grasped what was going on in the world around them, and were open to having conversations about these difficult things.
So your response to what happened on Sunday?
I mean, I think we're seeing this kind of atrocity occurring, and we need to be really asking not only what can we do, these are important questions, what kind of immediate institutional reforms, whether it's targeted, targeted gun control for domestic violence, might be effective, but we also can't lose sight of the question, ask what is going on in society today, what